vibration will at least require motivating it by discussing some work of Cohen, Moore, and Neisendorfer. And then the only recent stuff here, which is the stuff by Terrio and Gray, which is why I'm talking about this. So the new stuff is not by me. This is work of Steve Terrio and Brayton Gray. That's what's new in this discussion. Just wanted to make it clear, it's not my work at all. Talking about the talk that Steve Terrio perhaps would have given if he were still here, but he left last week. So let's start with some preliminaries. And a bunch of chalk. So first of all, throughout this talk, we'll have talking about finite CW complexes. So we'll talk about X, simply connected, finite CW complex. Okay. And the first thing historically that's relevant to what I have to say is Sayer claims that the homotopy and homology groups are finitely generated abelian groups. He says that for each k, pi k of x, and hk of x, finitely generated abelian. Okay. So we have decomposition theorem for finitely generated abelian groups, which means that for each individual prime, we can break it up and we can ask, you know, what do the different sum ends look like. So one thing is that homology of X, particularly in the years since 1951 when we have Sayer's spectral sequence to work with, among other things, the homology of most common spaces has been computed. The homotopy of, for dealing with simply connected spaces, the homotopy groups in their entirety have been computed for no spaces except for contractible ones. So there's a big difference between what we can actually say about this and what we can actually say about that. Now, so other questions have been asked. Of course, these have been computed in a range for certain nice spaces, like spheres. But one thing is we can ask other questions about it. So if we can't actually compute what these groups are, maybe we can say some properties of them. And one of the properties that has interested me is what's called the exponent question. So the question is whether there is a bound on the p-torsion. So the question is, remember, these are all finitely generated abelian groups, so I'm talking about all of them. So you take a particular prime p. So what I actually mean by this is, what's the element of largest order if there is an element of largest order? Now, for each individual k, there has to be, because each individual k is a finitely generated abelian group. But what I mean is, does there exist a bound independent of k? Right? So is there, we can ask, does there exist some number n such that p multiplication by p to the n kills all the p torsion? So that's like saying that within your sum ends, you have, you know, z mod p, z mod p squared, z mod p cubes, but nothing higher than z mod p to the n occurs. So you can ask whether there is such an n. There may or may not be, depending on the space. So we can ask whether there is such an n. There is a conjecture, but I won't go into it. There's a conjecture that is considered unapproachable at the moment by John Moore as to which spaces should have such an exponent, but nobody has any ideas about how to prove it, but I won't even mention it. Anyway, this number here, if it exists, is called a homotopy exponent for the space. Right? So this number, p to the n, if there is one, and there doesn't have to be, that would be called the homotopy exponent for the space X. Okay, and if there is one, you might want to compute the least n. If there is such an n, then you might want to try and compute the best possible one. Okay, so this is a question that we can ask for n space. if X happens to be an H space, there's a stronger version of the same question. An H space has a multiplication, and so then we can make a stronger version. We could talk about the multiplication map. So this is the map from X to X. I say the map. Should perhaps be a bit more specific. If X isn't associative or not homotopy associative, there could be many different ways in which you could multiply, so you pick some fixed order, anyway, for multiplication. So there are many different maps, but let's say we multiply from left to right. So we have a map here, and this map induces multiplication by M on homotopy groups. So this map makes sense if X has a multiplication, if it's an H space, and this is multiplication. This is what it induces if you apply it on homotopy groups. So a stronger version of the question that we asked up at the top is, does there exist an N such that this thing is null homotopic? So let's say when we localize at the prime P. So if this happens to be null homotopic, then multiplication by it will certainly kill all the homotopy groups. So this is what we call a space exponent if it exists. This would be an H-space exponent, simply a space exponent. So that's stronger than having a homotopy exponent. Okay. Okay, so there's some definitions now. These, I said, these things have not been computed for very many spaces. One of the few spaces for which these are known, at least for which most of the results are known, are spheres. And here's a history of some of the results for spheres. And I'm going to go into some more detail on the work of Cohen, Moore, and Neisendorfer, because that sets up the discussion of the fibration of Anik. So here's the history of results for X for 2n plus 1. Now, if your prime happens to be 2, then S2n might also have independent interest, but if your prime is greater than 2, or if you happen to be dealing with Hopf invariant 1 case, then you have a formula which reduces the case of the even ones to the odd ones. So this formula is true whenever you have elements of Hopf invariant 1, and recall, since you always have elements of Hopf invariant 2, if you've inverted 2, then you always have this formula. So this formula works either if you localize at a prime which is different from 2, or if n happens to be 1, 2, 4, and 8, 4 or 8. So if you're in any of those cases, there's no advantage to looking independently at the even spheres. In the other cases, there may be some interest in looking at what happens in even spheres, but I'm not going to look at even spheres, whether or not there's any possibility of saying anything new about them. So what are the history results for the odd spheres? So let me denote the number as E of n. So E of n will be the least n. Of course, initially it may not have been known that there is any. Turns out, however, that there is. So it turns out that there always is one. And before I say what the answer is, let me write down the conjecture. So the conjecture is that E should be n plus epsilon when P is the prime 2, where epsilon is either 0 or 1, and that it should be greater than, it should be equal to n if p is greater than 2. So epsilon is either 0 or 1 depending on the parity of n. Not sure who this conjecture is to. Probably in the case of the prime 2, it's probably due to Mahalald, I'm not sure. And perhaps to Toda, I don't know, in the case of odd prime. So I'm not really quite sure what the history of that is. So here are the summary of the results. So the first results we have are 1955, and they showed that the E is less than or equal to 2N. In particular, that there is such an E, which might not have been known before that, or maybe that nobody considered the question before that. So this was proved by James for P equals 2 and Toda for P greater than 2. Then we jump ahead to 1969, and Bright and Gray shows that E is greater than or equal to N. Okay, that works for all primes. Okay, next, we go basically to Moore and Eisendorfer and Cohn, except I sneak in there for N equals 1, so now we're going to approximately 1979, although some of it's actually 1977 and 78. And so we have that for P greater than 2, that E equals N. Okay, so that's the conjectured result. Okay? And this is due to me in the case N equals 1, due to Cohen, Moore, and Eisendorfer for P greater than 3, due to Eisendorfer in the case P equals 3. Let me come back to saying a bit more about this. I'm going to go into some more detail on this because this sets up Anik. There's one thing to be said about this is why was P equals 3 initially harder, and that's because of failure of the Jacobi identity mod 3. So this required analysis of the error terms and the failure of the Jacobi identity and seeing that they did not affect the result. So that's why initially there was some question about the prime 3. Okay, the only other result I want to put on my table is 1982 for P equals 2. This is due to me. We have epsilon is less than or equal to 3 halves N plus epsilon, which is still not as good as the conjecture, so that one is still open. So this is now solved. P greater than 2 is solved, but the case of P equals 2 is still open. Okay, so now I want to discuss the work of Cohen, Moore, and Eisendorfer to say what Anik vibration is, which is perhaps at least conjectured in the work of I don't know if it's conjectured in their work, but it follows the conjecture that there might be such a thing is suggested by the work of Cohen, Moore, and Eisendorfer. Let's put it that way. So let's look in more detail. Okay. So first of all, we're going to localize, since this is all at primes greater than 2, so let's look at prime greater than 2, and unless I say otherwise, by homology, I will mean homology with mod p coefficients. So I'm simply going to write h star, but I'm going to mean homology with mod p coefficients. And most of the spaces that we'll be discussing are h spaces, in which case this will actually be a Hopf algebra. So I'm going to write it on the homology side, but I'm going to write it like polynomial algebra or something like that. I'm going to write it as if it's an algebra, as if it has a multiplication. And in most cases, they are Hopf algebras, and the generators are actually primitive. So this will tell you what the cohomology is by dualizing. Okay, so what we have start off with was look at this vibration. So we'll first look at this map. So there's a standard map by which you include S2n minus 1 into loop squared S2n plus 1. This is the double adjoint of the identity map on S2n plus 1. So the standard way of including S2n plus 1 within loop squared S2n plus 1. And this is sometimes called the double suspension, written E squared. Right. And so we can take any map and we can turn it into a vibration, which means that we replace this space by some other space which is homotopy equivalent to what we started with, thereby producing a vibration, and then we can take what's called the take the fiber, and that is called the homotopy fiber. And the name for this, so Cohen, Moore, and Neisendorf were called the C of N, but a lot of people nowadays seem to call it W of N. So this is the notation for this space that you get after you turn this into a vibration and take the fiber. So this is called the homotopy fiber. Now all these exponent results are proved by looking at how things change as you go from one sphere to the next. So in fact, if you want to do inductive proofs, this space is the key to the induction, because this space represents how things change as you go from here to here. You have long exact homotopy sequences that involve these three terms, and if you assume by induction that you knew this and you wanted to figure out how things are related, if you go to here, it involves understanding how this space works. Right. So what they showed was that there exists a map which does the following. So this is what Cohen, Moore, and Neisendorfer showed. They showed there exists a map which they called pi. This pi doesn't stand for homotopy groups, it's just the name of the map. And it goes from loop squared S2n plus 1 back to S2n minus 1, making the following diagram commute. So here's your map pi, and here's your double suspension. And they showed that this composition is homotopic. So when I say it makes a commute, I mean it makes it homotopy commute. Right? So they showed that this composition is homotopic to that map P. Remember, P is my notation over here for the Pth power map. Okay? And this map, of course, induces multiplication by P on homotopy groups. So the effect of this diagram is to give that exponent, because why? It says that if I start with any element in the homotopy group here, that if I multiply it by P, it lifts back to there. Right? So in corollary of the existence of this map, with that property, and knowing that this map P induces multiplication by P on homotopy groups, the corollary is that if somebody gives you an X in pi k of S2n plus 1, that P times it, if you chase around the diagram, it says that P times X belongs to the image of the double suspension map from pi k minus 2 of S2n minus 1 to pi k of S2n plus 1. Right, so it says if you multiply your element by P, you can double desuspend it. Therefore, if you keep multiplying it by P often enough, you'll eventually bring it back to S1, at which point we know all the homotopy groups, but which does not, by the way, contradict my statement at the beginning, because S1 is not simply connected. But we do know all the homotopy groups of S1. And so we know that they're zero except in degree one, so a corollary of this is if you multiply by P to the N, you can bring it all the way back to S1, which tells us that unless K is equal to S2n plus 1, that you're going to get zero. So that this equals zero provided K is greater than 2n plus 1. So in microcosm, that's how it works. Of course, I haven't given you the construction of the map pi, which is most of the 100-page paper that they wrote. But anyway, so there's a lot of work to be done in actually showing that pi exists with this property.
Part of another paper, too.
Yes, right. For a long time, yes. Okay, so I want to say a little bit more about that. Where did this pi come from? I'm not going to go into any great detail on this, but one thing is that if you're given a vibration, say F to E to B, then one thing you can do is you can construct a sort of a connecting map which sort of geometrically realizes there's a long exact homotopy sequence that's associated to this, but there's actually a map of spaces that you can construct from loop space on B into F, which realizes the connecting map in that long exact homotopy sequence. And that is simply that you can take your F to E to B, and you can take the path space over E, and then you can take a pullback. So this is a vibration, and it turns out that you get the pullback space here is omega B, and you get some connecting map here, which I'll simply write as boundary. And what this map induces on homotopy, so this would be a map from pi k of omega b to pi k of f, and pi k of omega b is the same thing as pi k plus 1 of b, and so this becomes the long, this becomes the connecting map in the long exact homotopy sequence of that. So this is a geometric version of the connecting map. So, with that as preliminaries, they showed that there was a vibration, and then the pi comes out using this connecting map. So I can erase. I didn't use it. I guess, yes. Well, okay, so in the end, yes, it does exist in this case, and in the end, they gave an independent proof. So I guess their initial proof used induction starting on my theorem, but then they said it again without using my theorem. You could do this pi in that case as well. Right. Yeah, my proof was different. I didn't use the stuff. In particular, I didn't use Jacobi identities or anything, which is why there was never a problem for p equals 3 in my case, because it was done by a totally different manner, which didn't mention Jacobi identities.
Why did you start
to see what
the
first one came out in any case? It's just totally out of line. Well, actually, that's not quite true. It's really Hopf invariant one. I was going to say that after my thesis, I did take a look at what the obstruction was to trying to do a similar proof, and it turns out that what I did was I showed that the space related to S3 is the space in question when you're discussing 2n minus 1 and n is in this case, the 2n plus 1 rather when n is 1, the space in question sort of I construct this retraction off a space which, by construction, had exponent p. So I showed that this space is a retract. So it is, there was a way to phrase it afterward for any n. I looked at this, and then I proved that it cannot possibly be a retract except in the cases of Hopf invariant 1. So there was perhaps a plan which might have worked, but when I say might have worked, which one might have attempted to show, but could not work. Okay, so what they did was that they showed a vibration that goes like this. So first of all, they took what's called the Mohr space. So this space, P2n plus 1, that space in there, is S2n, with a new cell attached by a degree P map. So you take a two cell and you form a complex with only two cells. So you start with a 2n cell and then you attach a 2n plus 1 cell by a degree P attaching map. Right? This space is called the Mohr space, and that's our notation for it. Mohr space is commonly used for a space which has only one non-zero homology group. Right, so if you were to look at this space with integer coefficients, it would have only one non-zero homology group. Of course, if you look at it with mod p coefficients, it has two homology groups. So they took this space and they pinched it down to S2n plus 1. So this is, if you take this space and you pinch off the bottom cell, then of course you're left with a map down of the top cell. So that's that map here, and now you loop it. Okay, so you take this space, pinch down to S2n plus 1. And what they did was they calculated what the fiber of this map was. And it turns out what they showed, and this is where most of the 100 pages went into, was showing that this space is a product of S2n minus 1 and something else. I won't bother with what the something else is. So they showed that it looks like this, that it's a product that looks like that. And now we define pi, you take the connecting map, so you're saying this is a fibration, you've figured out what the fiber is, and now you project to one component. So that defines pi. This is projection to this factor. That defines this map phi. Okay. They went on to show a stronger statement, which is that this space, which I no longer have on the board, it is still on the board here, that the space C of n or W of n has space exponent p. That's a stronger statement in the sense that you can get the existence of a map. I'll write this down. You can get the existence of the map pi from that statement by simply looking at long exact sequences. So this is a stronger version of saying that there's exponent. They went on to show that the degree p map as a space, the map from C of n to itself, or call it C of n or Wn, is null homotopic. So they showed that p is null homotopic as a map from here to here. Right? So that says that, well, by diagram chasing, you can conclude that there is such a pi with this property from that. On the other hand, it's not really an independent proof because they use this to show that. Right? So first you show that there is such a pi, and then they use that to show that the p-powered map here is null homotopic. But anyway, this statement is strong enough to just to show the existence of pi, and in particular that you have a homotopy exponent p to the n. So this is a stronger version of saying the same thing. And there was a conjecture that this space, W of n or C of n, is a double loop space. And this conjecture is, I don't know for sure, but I think this is probably due to Barrett and Mahewald, perhaps, in sometime around 1965. I'm not really quite sure of that. When I say it's a double loop space, I mean up to homotopy. So what I mean is that there exists some space A, this is a conjecture, such that if you double looped it, you would get a homotopy equivalence with W of n. So that was conjecture. This would be after localization at some prime. I'm sure that Mahewald didn't conjecture this at any prime other than 2. For those of you who know him, realize he only talks about the prime 2, but maybe Barrett did. Actually, it was not even known in those days that W of n was an H-space. That was shown by me in the early 80s, but this was soon trumped by Brayton Gray, who showed something much stronger. What Brayton Gray showed was that it's actually a loop space. So here we conjecture that it's a double loop space, and what he shows is that it is at least a loop space. So I don't want to erase the definition of W of n, so maybe I'll just leave this board up there. Okay, I'll leave this board so that we'll keep the definition of C of n or W of n on there. Okay, so we have Gray, 1986 approximately, shows that there is a delooping. First delooping. Okay. I'm ready to start talking about AMIC. Okay, so, well, according to this, there should be such an A such that the double loop space on A is W of N. Now, without knowing that there is an A, we can calculate what the homology of A would be if it exists, using spectral sequence stuff. So we can try and calculate what its homology is, and perhaps that would help us try and construct it. So if it exists, we can see that the homology of A is going to be an exterior algebra tensor polynomial algebra. It's going to be an exterior algebra on generator in degree 2np minus 1 tensored with a polynomial algebra on some generator in degree 2np. Or if I write this in terms of spaces, that's like saying it's the homology of an S2np minus 1 tensor with the homology of a loop S2NP plus 1. But we don't expect this to be true with integer coefficients. That is, the bottom of these two cells are each going to be copies of Z, but they're in consecutive degrees, and we expect a degree P map. Not we expect, if the space exists, there would have to be a degree P map connecting these two. So the bottom would actually begin, if you were to look at it with integral homology, would begin with a Z mod P. Right. So I've written it with mod P homology, which actually have something in degree 2NP minus 1, and in the consecutive degree we have something in degree 2NP, and they'd be connected by a first Bochstein, as we say. Well, that's what the homology of A would look like if it exists. Right. Now, what this suggests, particularly comparing with what Cohen, Moore, and Eisendorfer did, it suggests that maybe you can do away with the space Z of N that I have over there. So it suggests there exists a vibration which would go S2NP minus 1 to some space A here in the middle to loop S2N plus 1, so that when you took the connecting map of this vibration, you would get the map pi. So that was what we hoped might be true, that there be such a space. And furthermore, this talks about only about the case where it's congruent to 0 mod p. Now, we have this one for every n. Right? So we could hope that this doesn't just exist in the case of, you would hope that loop squared A, I'll make that further. Well, let me finish this conjecture. So this conjecture is that there should exist such a space, and not just in the case of numbers which are of the form NP. So we could conjecture, I'll call this conjecture star. Conjecture, there exists vibration diagram, let's say, that we could put the two together so that we could make the vibration that we already have here with this connecting map but we could also make a vibration with some space which I will call ANP. We didn't know to call it ANP in those days, but that's because we didn't know that Anik was going to prove it. And we would put S2N minus 1 here, and this would be projection. So one could hope that you have a diagram that looks like this, and then your connecting maps, the naturality of your connecting maps, so you'd have loop squared S2N plus 1 here, you'd have, right, so these would be the two connecting maps, and that this connecting map would be pi. So this is what we were hoping for, right? And then we could make a further conjecture that the double loop space on this A, further conjecture, that the double loop space on A would be homotopy equivalent to Wn. There's further evidence for this was that the construction, which I never went into, to Gray's theorem, which is no longer here, this theorem here constructed this space B of N. He constructed it as the homotopy fiber of some map. So he constructed a map, which may or may not be pi. He constructed some map from loop squared S2NP plus 1 to loop squared S2NP minus 1, which behaves for all the world as if it was pi, and has this as its fiber. Okay, so he constructed some map, and homologically you can't see that there's any difference here between the fiber of this and what the fiber of that map pi is, and we could conjecture that his map is, or at least could be chosen to be pi, but this is unknown. Well, the question mark is not on the map. The question is whether this is the same map as Cohen, Moore, and Eisendorfer. Yeah, it sure is. Yeah?
Are you sure you want to call that guy up there A, President Presidency?
No. Right. No. A event. Sorry. Yeah. In this one should be, this one should be NP. Sorry. Right. Yeah. That one for N, and when defining this notation with that one being an N, when you replace N by NP, then you would hope that this comes out to be that. So, sorry, that was a typo. Got those backwards. All right. So, now we're ready to bring in Anik. Let me say one more thing about this space A, if it exists. What is the bottom of A going to look like? The bottom of A, remember it's an exterior algebra on two generators. It will be without necessarily having this P here, right, because we're conjecturing it exists even if it's not congruent to 0 mod P. So you'd have two cells down here at the bottom. Oh. So you'd have some cell here in degree that represents X. So this would be in degree 2n minus 1. So on homology or cohomology, that would be represented by X. And then you would have a Y here in degree 2n, and these would be connected. Depending on whether you're doing homology or cohomology, you'd have a first Bachstein going either up or down. This would be what's called the Bachstein, meaning that there's a degree P connection between these two. And then you'd have a product cell, right, up here in 4n minus 1. And a space like this kind of looks like the tangent bundle to S2n. In fact, this is the mod P analog of the tangent bundle to S2n. If you're looking here at tangent bundle to S2n, you have a map down to S2n. You have a fiber, which is 2n minus 1. And this S2n is connected to that S2n minus 1 by a degree 2 map. Right, so here we have a degree P map rather than a degree 2 map. So the bottom of this, the skeleton, looks like the mod P analog of the tangent bundle to S2n. Anyway, okay, so now we have theorem of Anik, which is 1991, says that if P is greater than 3, then conjecture star up there is true. Connecting map equal to the pi of Mohr-Naschendorfer and Cohn. And to repeat perhaps the question that Joe Naschendorfer asked at the time, is the restriction to p greater than 3 intrinsic? Is there some reason that p has to be greater than 3? Or had Anik simply failed to read the papers of the person who showed that the Mohr-Naschendorfer and Cohn results also worked for the case p equals 3? And Anik responded that perhaps after we'd see the proof, maybe we wouldn't ask this question. Maybe we would agree that that it was pretty hard enough just to get P greater than 3, and we shouldn't worry too much about the one missing case. So he gave us a series of lectures. I was on sabbatical in Rochester that year, and he gave a series of lectures, which took the entire year, in which he explained his proof. And the proof was indeed very long, and we never really fully understood it. Of course, when you just give lectures, a lot of it's left out, and the details were not written down anywhere. And Anik's plan, by the way, was as of September 1992 to go to medical school, to give up mathematics and go to medical school. It's September 1991, his plan was good. So the lectures took place in the term that started fall of 1990 to spring of 1991. That's when the lecture series took place. So we had a conference in Peterborough, Trent University, that year, and Anik came to this conference, and I said to him, is your proof written up? And he said, no, and he wasn't sure if he was going to do it. And I said to him, well, you have your choice. Do you wish to emulate Fermat or Galois? And he chose Galois. So he spent his last nights as a mathematician furiously writing up his proof. And October of that year, this manuscript arrived, 250 pages of intense calculations. So we started off trying to read it, and in many places when I say the calculations were not all there. The calculations, there are various points that you'd come to the statement, this is less straightforward, and left to the reader. However, he defined this phrase. Okay. His definition of straightforward was, this is straightforward if the first thing I tried worked, and it worked in more or less the way I expected it to work. Right? So there were many large numbers of things in this 250-page manuscript that were marked straightforward. And I started checking these straightforward things, and I mean, I got about halfway through. They all seemed to be correct. I didn't find any mathematical mistakes, typo here or there, but basically everything I checked was right, and I got more than halfway through. Fred tried to check it. I don't know how much Joe did. Yeah?
Given the fact that you all already had the exponent theorem, why did you consider this vibration so important?
I'm not sure. it's partly the space which looks like it ought to double loop to the other space, which is still unknown. The space looked like it was right, and it looked like it ought to be the way to go. It looked like, first of all, also it represents various other things as well. It represents this analogy with the tangent bundle, but I want to say something more about that. It represents an abelianization of an H-space, and one can wonder to what extent this exists more generally. So if you look at the homology of this Mohr space, so there's a map from here to here. So the homology of this is a tensor algebra on two generators, a U and a V, in degrees 2n minus 1 and 2n. That's homology I'm writing down. A U and a V in 2n and 2n, 2n minus 1 and 2n. Right? The homology of this is a free commutative algebra, which is to say exterior tensor polynomial. So this is the free non-abelian thing on generators in degrees 2 and 3. I'll write this as F, meaning the free abelian algebra on a U in degree 2n minus 1 and a V in degree 2n. Right? And this represents abelianization. And this is, in fact, a homotopy, as shown later, a homotopy, associative homotopy, abelian H-space. So one can ask whether such things exist more generally. But I don't want to say any more about it because I do want to say something about the work of Theriault and Gray, which is perhaps the punch, you know, the whole point. So let me say any more about that later. Okay, so, all right, so we have this manuscript by Anik, and eventually became a book, which was unrefereed, by the way, because Anik wasn't interested in going through a refereeing process. He was leaving mathematics. So he gave us this book. It was his legacy. And that's one of the things, of course, is that motivates the attempts to reconstruct the thing or to give a new construction of it, was that we didn't actually have anything that anyone had ever checked. Right? So now we have... Now we jump ahead 15 years, and we have a new construction of the space of Anik, which doesn't involve horrendous calculations, and also, by the way, works for the prime 3. So I must say that I always felt that Anik's approach was brilliant. I mean, nobody could understand his intuition, but we always felt that it was the wrong way to actually prove this particular theorem. Now, his idea was that one might use the techniques that he used in other cases, but none of us ever understood the intuition behind those techniques well enough to apply them to any other cases. So they're still sitting there. The book is now there, and, you know, one can read it. Anyway, okay, so now let's take a look at the Theriault and Gray approaches. So they wanted Theriault. Okay, so they wanted some method, as I said, that would produce it with relatively minimal calculations, at least compared to Annex 250 pages of stuff. So let's begin. Okay, first some notation. We have this degree M map from X to X, and we can turn it into a vibration, and the notation, which comes to us probably from Cohen-Moore and Neisendorfer, is that this space shall denote the homotopy fiber. Right, so this is defines the space on the left, or at least gives a notation for this. Right, so that's the definition of this space. Now we have the theorem of Theriot, which is that this space has, first of all, that P is null homotopic as a map from Gray's space to itself. This is not the same order of magnitude as the theorem we're looking at. This is relatively easier than some of the things which come later, so I'm not going to go into any more details on that. But this follows some properties that Gray showed back in 1986. So this has a relatively short proof, and it's nice, but it isn't of the same order of magnitude as construction of this vibration. This is more recent. Okay, so first of all, there's a diagram, and I'm going to write this diagram on the board and leave it here. So we have, okay, this is partly motivation. Now, Theriot also showed that if Anik space exists with the properties that Anik was claiming, that A of N also has this property. Okay. Now, we're conjecturing, of course, that A of NP loops to give this, and so that would be even stronger. But this, of course, is based on Anik's thing. Now, the idea was to give a complete construction which is independent of Anik. Right. So we're going to need this result. We're not going to try and use that Anik that he showed that Anik space had this exponent P as well. Anyway, so this what I'm writing down now is for motivational purposes. So Anik has a space that goes like this, and we have if we put the degree P map in here, then this composition is null, because Theriot had proved that using Anik's properties. So this is motivation. So that means that there's a list here. So if I use this notation that I have here, it says that there's some kind of a list. Now, Anik already knew about the list, even though I'm not sure he knew that the space had exponent P. Anik knew this diagram existed. And the fiber here is, by construction, this. And by diagram chasing, you can check that the fiber here is W of N. Okay? Now, what is the idea? Now, I won't claim that this is it's the execution of this idea which was very nice. The idea is not really due to Theriot or Gray. The idea is that this space will not de-loop, but this one does. So maybe you can construct a map here and then define this space as the homotopy fiber of that map. You can't do that here because this one is not a loop space, but you have a chance to do it here. Okay? So the question is, how do you construct this map, right? So this is where the work of Theriot Gray comes in. I mean, any of us have looked at this and said, oh, yeah, that would be nice to have this map here. But the question is, why should such a map exist, and how could you construct it? So here's Theriot's idea, and Gray does it a little bit differently. I'll quickly say Theriot, and then we'll quickly say Gray, and then I'm almost out of time. So. So what we want is a suitable map. Question is, can we find a suitable map here and define this as the fiber? Now, what makes a map here suitable? I mean, I could put the null homotopic map in here. I got a map, right? Question is, what makes a map suitable? What I want out of this map is that, okay, here's the definition, defining vibration for W of N. And according to Gray, you can do this, right? Gray says you can de-loop this so that you can pull this vibration back one term to the left. So what you want is that if I continue this, so this would be the connecting map of this vibration here, I want this to be the map that Gray gives it, right? So, I mean, I'm trying to define a new map So we've got this boundary map in here, and the question is whether you can, so this map you've got, and the question is whether you can produce one in here making that diagram commute. That would be a suitable map. So having this is enough by diagram chasing to show the existence of the space A, as the fiber of this map will have the right properties if there's a suitable diagram that looks like this. Well, the question is, why should there be such a map, and how could you construct it? Well, here's Theriault's idea. So he's going to use heavily the fact that this space B here has exponent P, meaning that that the degree P map there is null homotopic. So he says, okay, let's take this space here, mapping it down to there, so that's the same map, that's this map here. Now let's filter this space here by skeletons. So the homology of this space is polynomial algebra on some element x, say, degree 2n. So we'll filter it by skeletons. For historical reasons, we call the 2n skeleton that. The J here stands for James. So this is the 2nk skeleton. So its homology has all the polynomials up through x to the k. Right? And so this space here, where is it? Oops, I didn't mean to do that. I'll leave this and go on to the next blackboard. So this will be, so we can take the fiber here, and we'll give this space a name. So this defines this space. This is a homotopy pullback. That means you turn one of these maps into a fibration and take the fiber. So that defines a space CK. And because this is a filtration leading up to this, this space will be the union of all k's of these guys. Right? The union of these guys is this, so this is union of this. So it's like you filter this by skeletons and you filter this by inverse images of skeletons, just like in the Serre spectral sequence. Right? Okay. So his idea is that we're going to define this map inductively. If you look at this, you see that C0 is this. So the idea is to extend this thing, define a map, starting with the map that you've got there, and extend inductively. And why should you be able to extend inductively? Well, that's the whole point. So the reason that you should be able to extend inductively, here's CK minus 1, here's CK. Presumably you've got this already, and you're looking, can I put it in here? What you would want to know is that the attaching maps are divisible by P. Right? If you want to be able to extend from here to here, you need to know that the attaching maps which form this space with this space, that their composition into here is null. Well, given that we already know that degree P is zero on this space, it suffices to know that the attaching maps here are divisible by P. Well, why should they be divisible by P? Well, for that you've got to see homology calculations. So here is the homology point. It actually suffices to do it because this is an H space. It suffices to know that the suspension of the homology maps is divisible by P. You don't actually have to do it for the maps themselves. So the punchline is as follows. So what is in here that wasn't in the previous one? Right? If you look there, you've got the homology of JK, but not in the homology of JK minus 1 would be some element V to the N, right? So here you have the homology. This guy has homology 1 down through V to the N, and this one has homology with a basis only 1 down through V to the N minus 1, right? So this thing has one extra element. So what happens when you go upstairs? So that's what happens downstairs. What happens when you go upstairs? So now look at what extra you have in the homology of CK that you didn't have in the homology of CK minus 1. So here is the picture. So we have homology of CK, I'll put on this side the homology of CK minus 1 over here. Okay, so over here we have an element V to the N, and it turns out everything in this space up above is p-torsion, not like the space down below, which has all this integral stuff because of the way we formed this space as a 5 of degree P map. This space is all p-torsion. So is the homology of the CKs. So we have here a connecting map. So the first Bachstein, I'm not going to say what Bachstein means for those of you who don't know, but in fact what it means is that element isn't actually p-torsion, it is p-torsion rather than integral. And so there's something in consecutive degree, this will be a degree 2nk, there's an element here in degree 2nk minus 1 to which it's connected. But over here, noticeably missing is v to the n. Right? You still have this, but you don't have that. Right? Which means that you suddenly have an integral element here, and what that means is that this resembles the situation where you took a sphere, this looking like a Mohr space, and you pinched off. It kind of looks like you formed this thing that way. So it looks like the attachments are as follows. So this is just suggesting, I'm not going to say what's actually happening here, but what happens on homology, you've got to check that this is actually happening at the space level. It looks like what you've got is something like this, and I've got to suspend to make it work right. So this is the suspension of that, which is an integral class. Over here, you've got something which is hitting this pair here. Right? So you've got the bottom cell hitting that one and the top cell hitting that one. And the picture looks like this, where this is the attaching map. So it looks like you have a picture that looks like this, where this is the attaching map. Right? It looks like you formed this from this by attaching a map which parallels the way you attach a degree P map from here to here to form this Mohr space. You have to have the suspension, but that's okay because you've got a homotopy H space, and the thing about being an H space is that Sugawara proved that an H space is a retract of its own loop suspension. So that's good enough to know it after suspending. Okay, let me say just a few words on Gray. Okay, so this was Terrio's idea. You extended inductively using that these degree P maps are divisible by P, and that was the difficult part. Yeah, P is odd, yes. Well, F2n minus 1 is not an H space when P is 2, so lots of things fall apart when P is 2. There's some possibility of doing this for the prime 4, but there are probably people in this room who don't think that 4 is a prime, so let's not discuss that any further. Okay, so what is Gray's idea? Gray is going to apply this type of thing, but to a different location. Gray is going to say, well, let's look here. This is Mohr, Neisendorfer, and Cohn again. So Mohr, Neisendorfer, and Cohn talked about pinching down from a sphere to the Mohr space, and that actually in the same way as Anik. So this is sort of a delooped version, and they have this map here, and they define these spaces F and E. So this is Mohr, Neisendorfer, and Cohn again, defined F and E as the fiber of these maps respectively. And Gray says, well, let's filter this by skeletons and this by inverse images of skeletons. So, similar type of thing. So, no, he's not using their theorem. He's using the spaces. Well, he's using some things that they computed about these spaces. F, for example, they computed the homology of F. So if we're going to take skeletons, we have to know what its homology is and things like that. So he's using some things that they proved about these spaces. And so in here, we can take FK, which is the 2NK skeleton. And then we can take the pullback here, the inverse image. And we can now filter this. And the idea is to inductively define maps from E. So eventually, writing E as the union of these EKs, you eventually get yourself a map from here to here, right? So this would be a gray, another gray area, which factors the Terrio map. So if I continue this picture a little bit, there's a boundary map here, and that produces, so there's a boundary map in here, right? So what he's saying is I can factor Terrio as follows. He says, here I can take this map. So Terry will produce a map like this. He says, I can define your map by defining this map and let your map be this composite. And being able to factor Terrio through here gives stronger results. Okay, so that's all I wanted to say. And thanks for this. Oh, I should mention one more thing. It's still open. So that conjecture is proved, but it's still open as to whether or not, now that we've got the space and we're all convinced that it exists, well, I guess we were all convinced by Anik anyway, even if we didn't understand his proof, we still don't know whether or not it double loops to give W of N.